Next item on the agenda, item number 6, commission briefing regarding recent complaints concerning mooring of house barges over state-owned submerged land. Mr. Nyker, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Oh, no, I've had several calls and I've told them storms.
I'll just get right into the slides. This is a discussion item. It's not really necessarily a public hearing, but it's more to
discuss and brief.
Brief the commission on this item. Lights, please, Kathy. We recently received an inquiry from the owners of two waterfront parcels located along Broad Creek in the Deltaville area of Middlesex County. They are concerned with the proliferation of structures called aqua lodges, trademark name, that are secured to piers at the Bay Marina located along Broad Creek. Aqua lodges are manufactured by catamaran cruisers and are essentially a floating dwelling supported by a fiberglass catamaran hull. Mr. Barry Miller, the principal owner of Bay Marine Limited, recently began selling the aqua lodges and then in turn renting the buyer's boat slips if they choose at which to moor their moor the structure to his piers. Since the structures are not typically motorized, they appear to serve primarily as recreational living quarters. According to their website, the Aqua Lodge measures 40 by 12 feet wide and includes a living area with 11-foot ceilings, a bathroom, a full-size shower, a kitchenette, microwave, stove, and refrigerator. An upper loft area sleeps up to 6 people. Boat motors are listed as optional. They are described as a second home, a vacation retreat, an ideal place to entertain or live aboard. This picture was taken at one of the Bay Marina piers. This is the second of the Bay Marine's two piers. I believe there are currently 9 aqua lodges tied to the piers. You can note they have electrical and water hookups. There are a variety of configurations and features. See the one on the left there has an elevated deck area, has little plants on the front porch. This one has a screen porch. This is one that is on the upland. I included it so you can see it is actually constructed on fiberglass catamaran hulls. And there is a motor mount on the back.
Okay.
I did not note any motors on any of the ones that currently moored at the facility. This one does show the optional wheel. Some have air conditioners. Some displayed boat registration numbers. This picture is from the Aqua Lodge website. This one is motorized, and he's at the helm. This is also from the Aqua Lodge website, and it obviously shows a struggling water skier. As much as he's struggling, I don't know if that could get me up or not. Bob noted he's not sure where the required spotter is on this. He might be inside, I guess. The following pictures are also from the website, and it show the interior of these structures. Some of these pictures are actually thumbnail images from the website and will appear blurry. There are other companies and manufacturers that make similar products. Ranging from, you know, trailerable motorized houseboats to barge-supported custom homes and even floating hotels. These types of structures are relatively new to Virginia, but houseboats, house barges, and multi-story floating homes have been deployed in areas along the West Coast for many years. It reportedly sleeps 6 to 8 people. This bedroom. This is a kitchen. Got a little three-burner stove and sink, bathroom, shower. Let me back up here. Back up a second. The health department is currently investigating their regulations to determine what sewage treatment requirements or restrictions are appropriate for these structures. The Aqua Lodge website states that they come standard with a 150-gallon holding tank for sewage and that normal gray water can be pumped overboard as a direct discharge. Although many boats have similar facilities, staff assumes there is a greater potential for water quality impacts when these structures are being used on a permanent or semi-permanent basis, especially when they're sited away from marinas with convenient sewage pump-out facilities. You have to keep in mind, if these are considered boats, there may be little or no restriction on their being anchored within a creek or tied to a private pier for an extended period, perhaps even serving as a residence at an otherwise undevelopable property. The intent of this discussion is not to dwell on the aesthetics. It's intended to note the variety of floating structures and to highlight some of the policy questions and potential issues. Obviously, this would be at the low end of the range, but it does appear to have propulsion and steerage capabilities, and that's really why I put this in here. I'm not quite sure where this picture was taken, and I believe it was mainly as a joke, but it does illustrate the difficult task of defining a boat. I mean, this one floats, it has a motor, and it's got steerage. Now they get interesting. This floating home is constructed on a 3/4-inch plywood hull and is listed for sale for $285,000. It's located down in the Keys. Although permits are required for moorings, there are minimal restrictions on where a boat may be anchored or tied up. If these floating structures are considered boats, staff is concerned. There is a potential for these structures could be tied or anchored or moored at locations for an extended period of time, essentially establishing a residence over state-owned submerged land. With minimal restrictions on siting, there's also a potential for these structures to be congregated in more pristine areas, adversely affecting water quality, submerged aquatic vegetation, and other aquatic habitat. We would also anticipate serious concerns being expressed by neighboring legitimate waterfront property owners. This is a design from a company called Carolina Houseboats. They're out of Raleigh, and it's a real design. The commission has a long history of minimizing encroachments of structures over state-owned waters so as to limit their impact on uses of public waters. Additionally, the commission's water dependency policy discourages the permitting of structures over state-owned submerged lands that are not considered water dependent. The commission has denied numerous requests, even for small structures such as sheds and gazebos, when it was determined that those structures or their associated activities did not need to be located over state-owned submerged lands. Structures such as houseboats, house barges, and floating homes all encroach over state-owned submerged lands and have the potential to impact other uses of the waterway. Check this one out. This is also from Carolina Houseboats. Note that it is described as being on a calm water hull that can be motorized with cruising speeds of 5 to 7 knots. While boats may have a similar potential to impact other public uses, they're obviously water dependent. Additionally, the mooring of a boat at a private pier or permitted marina slip is a reasonable and expected activity. The relevant question appears to be, how do we differentiate between a boat and some other type of floating structure? This is from the West Coast. Again, it's a little blurry because it was just a little thumbnail on a web page. The difference between a small runabout and a large floating home may seem obvious. However, defining the difference between certain vessels and other floating structures can be difficult. Accordingly, we've investigated how some other agencies and states more familiar with floating structures have addressed the issue. At this point, we're not prepared to endorse or recommend any particular definition. And the following definitions are provided as general information and background and more kind of thought-provoking, I guess. Note the helicopter up there. According to a publication produced by the Seattle Department of Planning and Development, the city of Seattle has three classifications for floating marine structures. They are floating homes, house barges, and vessels, and they're defined as follows. Floating homes are defined as single-family dwellings constructed on a float that are moored, anchored, or otherwise secured in waters. Floating homes are required to be located in approved areas with sewer and water connections. Seattle's construction codes apply to floating homes, and there are floating subdivisions in Seattle. A house barge is defined as a vessel that's both designed and used for navigation, but lacks a means of self-propulsion and steerage, and is designed or used as a place of residence. Only house barges that date back to 1990 are allowed, and they must be moored in recreational marinas. They must also be able to demonstrate that all overboard discharges have been sealed and that there is a satisfactory method to convey wastewater to an approved disposal facility. Seattle's construction and utility requirements are not applicable to house barges. New house barges are not permitted in Seattle, and according to the 2004 document, there are only 34 approved house barges in Seattle. Seattle also defines vessels as boats, ships, barges, and other floating craft that are both designed and used for navigation. They are not regulated by the city's construction codes. They must be moored at approved facilities. Vessels must be designed for navigation, including having a seaworthy hull that meets Coast Guard requirements. They must be capable of water transportation, and if used for recreational or residential purposes, they must be able to travel under their own power to open water, including a method for steerage and propulsion, deck fittings, navigational and nautical equipment, and the required marine hardware. They must also be registered by federal, state, and local agencies, and the document notes, however, that being registered alone does not mean that it's considered a vessel. This is my favorite. That's a basement with a porthole. The Tennessee Valley Authority also provides a definition for navigable and non-navigable houseboats. Additionally, they prohibit new non-navigable houseboats in any of their reservoirs. A navigable houseboat is defined as a self-propelled houseboat that is built on a boat hull or two or more pontoons and which is equipped with a motor and rudder controls located at a point on the houseboat from which there is forward visibility over a 180-degree range. The Coast Guard allows states to impose more stringent rules regarding marine sanitation devices for houseboats. The Coast Guard defines a houseboat as a vessel that for a period of time determined by the state in which the vessel is located is used primarily as a residence and not primarily as a means of transportation. This is the floating hotel that I mentioned. I believe this was in British Columbia. It's a floating home community. And this was a conceptual drawing on one of the web pages I found. I thought it was interesting to note that each floating home also has a slip for a boat, so you can actually go someplace. Staff is not prepared at this time to make a recommendation regarding these house barges or other types of floating structures. As I mentioned, the purpose of this discussion item is to alert the Commission to what we consider to be a significant potential problem and to perhaps initiate further discussion or a study for a need for a regulatory approach to this issue.
Any questions for Mr. Nykirk from the Commission? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chip, what sort of study would you envision?
I don't know. I think an investigation with, probably combined with the health department, seeing how they're going down the lines as far as regulating the sewage and gray water that are generated by these. Probably some sort of definition of a boat. I don't know who we'd have to involve in that. Be that.
If DGIF is registering them, I think we go need, that route.
I think you need all three agencies involved.
It's an interesting question. The more I looked into it, the more confused I got.
Does someone here from the company that could answer some questions as well?
Yes. Barry Miller is here. He's the local distributor for Aqualogis.
Any other questions for Chip before we hear from Mr. Miller?
Define gray water for us, please.
Gray water is the water other than sewage. That would be coming off of a sink or those. Dr. Kronenberg from the health department is also present. I think he'd like to speak a little bit today too.
We'll like to hear from him as well. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Sir, Mr. Chairman, my name is James Ward. I'm an attorney practicing Saluda for the last 29 years.
No, sir. I need to be sworn.
I guess you all figure it doesn't do any good to swear a lawyer in.
We understand that it happens at least once in your career, and we rely upon that.
Exactly.
Good to have you here, Mr. Ward.
Nice to be here again. I guess I have a little advantage that some attorneys practice and don't. I grew up in Deltaville. I know exactly where this is. My father had a 75-foot oyster bowboat, and I spent many a hot summer on that railway. I think the first thing that really bothers me is when you're talking about a gentleman's livelihood like this, and I hear people laughing, that bothers me. It really does. I mean, I'm sure if that question, that livelihood, whether somebody was getting ready to take that job today, they would not find it as amusing. I know it's a difficult question. I've known Mr. Nykirk for a long time, have the utmost respect for him. But that does give me grave concern. This is an important issue. And it seems like it's become important because of complaints, which is normally how things happen. Because I'm looking at a letter from Matt Higgins, the planning director of Middlesex County, dated March 28, 2006, to Barry Muller. Says, per your official request today, please find the pertinent information regarding the proposed Aqua Lodge sales at your property. During the week of March 20, 2006, I contacted the Virginia Marine Resources Commission for their official determination as to whether the proposed Aqua Lodges would be classified as boats. Based on their response, the county would officially consider the Aqua Lodges as boats, and the Aqua Lodges would be subject to the same use restrictions and regulations under Middlesex County zoning ordinance as boats. Somebody evidently talked to Mr. Higgins and told him back then it was a boat. By a letter dated August 31, 2006, from Charles Cully, County Administrator, in response to your letter of August 25, 06 to Mr. Muller, as far as we're concerned, the Aqua Lodge is a boat and the county has no more issues with them. If we have any questions regarding your Aqua Lodge operation, we'll contact you directly. So somebody made a determination previously that it was a boat. I know you all are going to look into it, and you need to. That's your obligation. But I think there should be some ground rules. There are 12 marinas on Broad Creek. There are over 721 boats in these marinas. There are more boats owned by property owners on Broad Creek. I read somewhere in here this gentleman said that he wrote in and said that he used to water ski where these barges were. Well, ladies and gentlemen, long before age and overweight caught me, I skied a lot in Deltaville, and you did not ski in this area of Broad Creek. There's always been a lot of boats in the Broad Creek area. I think also another thing we need to do is we need to compare apples to apples. I don't know where Chip got these pictures of this floating thing. That's not what this man is selling. But what I would like for the commission to do and take into consideration, while you are studying this issue, let's do it in a generic manner. Have them also check out the other 12 marinas and see how many boats are moving out of those marinas. He has the pump-out station. Discharge of the gray water is something that's used by many boats in this area. As I said, I grew up on the northern prong of Jackson's Creek. We had one of the first marinas, and 80% of the boats, none of them left the marina because I think some of them couldn't get out the channel, but they used it as somewhere to live on. Until you decide that what this man is doing is wrong, which I don't think you should or will, we would appreciate it that the language, the terminology, and the discussion be of generic nature by stating in the documentation here, and I presume this gentleman back here is a reporter because he's been writing a whole lot real quickly while we've been talking. It has a detrimental impact on this man's livelihood if it's determined that what he's doing is correct. By putting the name of the boats that he sells and his name in this, even though that was he's the original person in this area selling them, it has a detrimental impact on his livelihood, and we would request that from henceforth that the issues be addressed generically, because you are making this decision not just for the waters of Broad Creek, but for all the waters in the state of Virginia, and we would appreciate you doing that. I appreciate your time. I know you have other things that you need to do, Mr. Miller's here and can answer some of the questions before you tell Mr. Nykirk, give him a direction as to where he should go. I do appreciate your time, and if I can answer any questions, I'd be more than happy to try.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. Any questions of counsel? Mr. Ward, let me just tell you a little bit where I think I'm coming from as commissioner. Certainly, there are a lot of different things that considerations that are to be made probably on a local level. You know, there are a lot of considerations that pertain to zoning and pertain to the location and what's acceptable and what's not acceptable in the local environment. And those decisions are made either at the local level or at the state level by General Assembly or such. My concern at first blush here when it was brought to me is the safety and concern as it relates to the waterways. I'm a little concerned, and I haven't received the information yet, which is why I was very certain to make sure that before we introduced this item before the commission that it was a briefing matter.
Yes, sir.
My concern is the health and sanitation aspects of it, as well as the construction of these facilities as it relates to the possibility of storm damage and debris and the potential damage to the waterways of the Commonwealth in such events. So just want to let you know that I can assure you as we go down the path, it will be an open discussion where these matters will be considered as well as any other things that come up. As far as the generics are concerned, I think you're right. I think what happened in this situation was it's such something new that the name of the brand kind of caught on as the name of the structure. So I don't think there was any intent, however your point is well made, was not any intent to in any way impugn the integrity of this one specific company or the specific gentleman that sells them. So I just want to make that clear before going any further. And I thank you for your presentation.
I appreciate that, and I wouldn't expect anything less from you or from the commission. Mr. Cowart's no longer on the commission, I say.
No, sir.
Thank you.
Would gentleman like to speak?
I think Mr. Miller does.
Mr. Miller, good to have you here, sir.
Yes, my name is Barry Miller.
Good to have you, Mr. Miller.
Here to answer any questions that I can as far as the structure. One problem I've got, if I may.
Yep, absolutely. Because I do have a couple questions.
I see the wording throughout the presentation is structures. This is a boat. It is registered as a boat. It's sold as a boat. We tax it as a boat. They have the VA numbers and the hull identification. So we've got to get away from structures and look at it as what it is. I can see, you know, later on down the road, people look at this and see the big homes and that type of thing. Right. But that is not where we are right now. The manufacturer of this boat has been building houseboats for 25 years. It's not something new. It's not something that just popped up here. The difference is this has a metal roof and it's got shutters and a picket fence. And people see it and they just, you know, what is this? It looks different. It's got the same hull as the rest of their boats have. The top side is just in a different configuration.
In calling it a boat, does it undergo any, or is it certified by the United States Coast Guard? The
Coast Guard visits their plant when they construct it. This is a boat manufacturer. This is not a home manufacturer.
And my question is it certified? Does it come with a certification plate that specifically states, like on most boats do, the maximum horsepower that's allowable, maximum occupancy, maximum weight?
We do have that criteria, yes. As far as the plate, I'm really not sure on that. I can contact the manufacturer on that. But it does have the running lights. It's got to have running lights on it. It's got the safety packages, the fire extinguishers, and outboard motors, fuel tanks, and that type of thing. So.
And by certifying it, or at least applying those boat building principles and getting away from the structure aspect of it, I would presume that the top portions, the living quarters, are they built to withstand any specific amount of winds or amount of?
These boats are delivered by truck. So they're on the road doing 70 miles an hour. We did have these units in during the last Northeaster that we had. We had a couple that stayed on it. and they fared well. I mean, there is no problem. We've got sailboats in the same marina. We had damage on those. No damage on the lodges. It's new. I think it scares a lot of people, but we've got to look at what it is. It is a boat. It looks different, but it is a boat, and people are getting away from it and trying to make it something that it's not.
Mr. Schitt,
if this lodge thing is a boat, why do you even have an option for it not to have a motor?
It's
a boat, right?
If I sell you a boat, if you go down on 17, we were talking with the attorney coming over, and you want to buy a 19-foot or 25-foot well craft, do you have to buy a motor when you buy that boat?
You go to a well craft dealer, yes. You've got to have a motor on the back of that boat.
No, sir.
You can't buy a boat from a dealership without a motor on it.
You can. I am a licensed watercraft dealer, and I can sell outboard motors. We offer it. But it's not for me. I don't feel. I might be wrong. I'm not questioning you. But it's not for me to
judge. Does every lodge that you sell have a tank, a fuel tank in it?
No.
Does it have a steering wheel?
Not every one. It is an option that you can get it.
How do these boats get to pump out?
We've got a unit that we can pull around to it.
At your marina?
Yes.
But at other marinas, they don't.
All marinas have to have a pump out facility.
Not a portable pump out.
This boat can be moved and put it a slip. We've got a boat that's been sold. It's up on Smith Mountain Lake. You see the pictures of the boats moving. If the customer wants an engine, we're there to sell engines. I'm not there to tell people that they can't take this boat and move it. I want people to enjoy it. I want it to be moved. If it comes to an issue that the boats have to be powered and moved, so be it. I do not have a problem with that. I would like to see if they come to me and point at my boat and the ones that I'm selling and say, you've got to have a motor, then all the rest of the boats that are moored and all the rest of the boats are sold come under the same criteria. That's all. Thanks. I do not have a problem putting power on them.
Thanks, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the concerns that's obviously come up in this discussion is the hazards of increased gray water discharge. How are your units plumbed? Is the gray water discharged overboard?
Gray water is discharged. That comes from the sinks and showers.
Right.
Black water from the waste.
It's going
either goes into a holding tank or an MSD sanitation device. It's basically up to the customer. Personally, I think the holding tank is the way to go. There have been a lot of issues and a lot of comments. DEQ was one of the first organizations to get in on this. They've been talking about making Broad Creek a no-discharge zone. It's fine. I do not have a problem with it. I'm there. I want to protect the environment just like everybody else. I got my children growing up in this area.
But your standard plumbing arrangement right now is
for the holding tank.
But gray water is all overboard.
If that be. Now, the one that we sold for Smith Mountain Lake, which is a no-discharge, and by state regulations, there is no discharge, then there is a holding tank for the gray water.
For the gray water.
Okay. Also.
Thank you very much. Dr. Kronenbergs, thank you for your presentation. Good morning, sir. Good to have you.
Good morning. Thank you.
Sir, could you state your name and who you represent for the record for the rest of the folks here,
Bob? Yes, I'm Robert Kronenberg. I'm the director of the Division of Shellfish Sanitation in the Health Department.
Thank you.
Just came forward to offer some comments while you all are considering this issue. The division classifies, one of the things that we do in the Division of Shellfish Sanitation is to classify shellfish growing waters, and we do that on the basis of both actual and potential pollution inputs. One of the pollution parameters of concern, of course, is fecal contamination. That's our number one concern when you're eating raw shellfish. So when we are assessing a situation like a marina, we use a mathematical model that takes into consideration the water depth and the tidal currents and that sort of thing for dilution. But we also put in a factor of the amount of fecal pollution that would go over during the course of a day. So we have to model a rate of input of fecal contamination. And a couple of things, we have a couple of ways of trying to get at a scenario that is not the absolute worst case, but a reasonable bad case. We want to protect public health. So we want to look at the situation in one of the worst cases to make sure that should that case happen, that we have enough dilution around that marina, we would close those waters for the direct harvesting of shellfish. You may or may not know, around marinas, we normally have those closed during the boating season from April 1 through October. And then the closures then are around those marinas are lifted during the cold weather months because there's less boating. So as we look at these aqua lodges generically, as we look at this sort of structure, we have a heightened degree of concern because people are living, will live on these structures with probably, I think reasonably, different expectations for showering and going to the bathroom than you would on a boat in a marina for the weekend. In other words, boats tend to have relatively small bathrooms. I'm not sure really about the shower facilities, but obviously when you go to one of these structures, you have a nice bathroom with a shower, a nice toilet. It's there to use. We are concerned about the fecal input from a vessel like this. And it doesn't matter if it's classified as a boat or a house or however that breaks out. Our concern is not legalistic. Our concern is public health and what goes overboard. And if you macerate, chlorinate, add some formaldehyde or whatever to the sewage, it will not kill all the viruses and bacteria. They are too bound up within organic material, and those disinfectants do not eliminate all of the viruses or bacteria, especially the viruses. Those are what are of concern to us. Hepatitis is not a huge concern in Virginia, but norovirus, the cruise ship type virus, is very much of concern. Those viruses that cause diarrhea, nausea, takes very few viral particles, 1 to 10, theoretically only 1 to 10. A sick person discharges billions. And then shellfish turn around and concentrate viruses out of water on the water of 100 times the concentration that's in water. We all know that oysters and shellfish pump a lot of water. So we're talking about pulling viruses of concern out of the water column and eating those shellfish. So we have to be very careful and so we have not come to hard and fast decision of how to deal with these. It's an issue that we are wrestling with and working with. But how do you handle if they are going to have an agreement to pump out a holding tank? They may or may not pump it out. You know, it may fill up. Maybe. You know, the family's there for a long weekend, and it's not easy to get it pumped out, and you discharge some of it. We are really ethically required to have a buffer large enough to handle that sort of situation. So we are not we're still just trying to work through and understand how we would deal with all these different scenarios, but we definitely have a heightened concern about these structures. So we would envision having a larger closure around areas that have these structures, and we, since they would be usable year-round, we would, at this point, envision having a year-round closure. The year-round closure might not be as large as affected by the rest of the boats. That'd be a detail that we would have to work out. But the input from these boats would likely be larger than from these vessels, probably larger than from boats. So there are a lot of issues that we really haven't worked out totally. But just want you to know that we are concerned about them.
Any questions for Dr. Kronenbergs?
I have one.
I'm sorry. Dr. McConaughey.
You talked about your model for your marinas, and what percentage of the boats do you consider are being lived in when you run a model?
We haven't differentiated between live-ins recently. We had of concern about that years ago. There seemed to be fewer of them. The way we model is to look at we take a percentage occupancy. So we'll say maybe 30% or 50% of the boats will be occupied on a peak weekend, and then we have a failure rate, and we might say 15% or 30%. If it's a marina in a remote area where there are a lot of no-see-ums, we would think, well, not a lot of people are going to be spending the night on the boat, and we would have less concern there than a situation where it's more developed and you're more apt to have parties that go late into the night, and then we would have a higher occupancy rate, maybe run that up to 50%, and a failure rate of 30%. Two people per boat, so to a certain extent, it's generic. We use some generic parameters.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Dr. Kronenbergs? Thank you, Doctor.
Certainly.
Thank you. While we're going over, Vims, do you have any comment pertaining to water quality, clarity, or anything pertaining to this? I have one question. Just one, since we're looking at the whole water quality issue, and we've dealt with shellfish sanitation. We're talking about gray water. The gray water, I would presume, would contain water, soap, other type of things that would run down. What kind of impact do you think that would have, not just on the shellfish sanitation aspect, as far as overall water quality as it pertains to the introduction of phosphorus and other pollutants that may cause potential algae blooms or other problems? How do they relate to gray water, or can you
Well, I guess, excuse me, what we look at is gray water we consider could be anything that is not put down a toilet. So that could be essentially anything. And just to answer your question from a probability perspective, the larger the concentration, the larger the total number, the smaller the waterway, the longer the time that they are in the water and used as they are promoted, the higher the concern at all food levels of the food chain.
Any other questions for? Thank you. Thank you, Lyle. I appreciate it. For the record, that was Lyle Varnell, Virginia Institute of Marine Science. Well, the matter's before the commission for discussion as to, where do we go from here? Mr. Ward did make, and did Mr. Miller, a good comment. This is new. And anything new has a lot of different aspects of discovery and discussion, for lack of a better way. I don't think right off the bat at first blush that it should appear that we're out to put anybody out of business, but I think some good issues have been raised here as it relates, you know, primarily to safety and the environment. You know, once again, aesthetics, you know, that's a lot of times in the eye of the beholder. And when new things come along, it's sometimes a difficult, it presents difficulty. So, anyway, Mr. Schick.
I think that staff basically kind of broke some things down about defining what a boat is, and also talking about how to deal with sanitation and gray water from boats that are promoted as live aboard or primary or secondary residences. From a marina standpoint, I've had experience with vessels not quite like this one that were built on a catamaran hull, but we have had in the past boats that were on barge hulls. We've come to the conclusion that we don't accept them in the marina anymore because they are a difficulty. Now, we had been looking at the concept of having a direct hookup to septic and gray water so the boats wouldn't have to leave the slip. Because it was a difficult situation to tow the boat over to the pump out. They had larger holding tanks than our portable pump outs would have. Now, I don't want to say this, I don't know anything about this particular product, but I'm just saying in general, there is a problem with that, and it needs to be addressed from a safety standpoint, as we said. It's something that's urgent. The bay is on a teetering edge as it is, and we don't need any type of new factor to tip it off the scale, and something like this can get out of hand real quick.
Thank you. Further comments? Mr. Bowden.
I think when you need to really look at this two ways, we really don't want to put Mr. Miller out of business. I mean, that nobody up here wants to do that, but I also believe we don't want to put anybody growing shellfish in those areas or harvesting shellfish in the areas out of business either. So I think it's something that definitely we need to look at, and I think we need to look at the aspect of not just the sales of these units, but also the potential impact of people around them harvesting shellfish, because that probably one of the best growth areas in the seafood business in the state right now would be aquaculture. I think we really need to be ginger when we do this.
Further comment, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we would benefit from moving forward with some sort of study on this, because we're going to need to develop a policy that not only addresses issues related to water quality, but also issues related to the definition of these vessels/structures, and also addresses issues specific to this commission's jurisdiction, namely issues of water dependency. And I think some of that policy needs to be coordinated with the Department of Health, and also I think would benefit from VIM's assessment of the water quality issues. But I think on the water dependency, that's going to be something specific to this commission, and I think we need to develop a policy to deal with these types of situations.
Any further comment?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Holland.
I agree with Rick, but I also think we need to include DGIF in that study also, because that's where the definition of a boat, and they're in charge of registering boats and so forth.
Any further comment? I'm pretty much of the belief that we should enlist the assistance of any group that may have some standing in this matter. Is it a boat? What's the definition of a boat? Health aspects of it, discharge. As it relates to shellfish sanitation, discharge as it relates to water quality, water dependency. And last but not least, I think the gentleman who's involved in selling the company should also have a seat at the table as well to answer any questions that may come up. I think there's no better resource than he. So, Mr. Grab, I think what I'd like to do, unless you have any suggestions before I go further, is it is charged the Habitat Management Division with establishing a work group to address these matters and proceed at a clip that would not be too fast, but at the same time not be so slow as to not allow us to start making some decisions that may be forthcoming.
If it's the commission's decision to move forward, then what I might recommend is referring it to HMAC, Habitat Management Advisory Committee, with the understanding that HMAC would have to be broadened, or if we had a...
For the record, that would be the Habitat Management Advisory Committee.
Correct. To include Coast Guard, DGIF, you know, Mr. Miller, user groups, and things of this nature. I think both Mr. Ward and Mr. Miller made a good point, and if you noticed in Chip's presentation, we tried to get away from the trademark Aqualodge and to use what we think is a generic term right now of house barge, which doesn't really accede to the fact that it's a boat structure. It is floating. So if it's all right with you, we would propose to use the term house barge as we move forward. And I think in general, one of the things that we were looking at from the standpoint of staff, and again, not trying to highlight a specific segment of the industry, used to be trailers. And then it went to pre-manufactured homes and mobile homes. And there's a segment of the industry that builds those now. But through zoning and site restrictions and requirements, you can't necessarily put a pre-manufactured home or a mobile home on any particular lot. And while I think Mr. Miller is correct, when we were first contacted by Middlesex, there's little difference that staff can see between in a marina setting. A 1957, you know, Owen that has the engines removed, that's been floating there for a number of years and has liveaboards, and a house barge in a marina environment. Our real concern is not so much the sales and the use, but if they start to go to other areas, and they're towed to a creek or they're towed to a shellfish area, and they're anchored all summer long, and used as a floating home, and they're not getting underway, that in fact it does present use conflict issues and water quality and environmental issues that really aren't addressed by the standard, boat that will come in and anchor overnight or over a weekend and move on a Monday morning. So those sorts of uses of state-owned submerged lands and the impacts are really the things that we were trying to get at. But as you know, staff is reluctant to step off, on its own, and we really wanted to get a sense, from the commission as to what your guidance was before we did that. And I think, can
I get a consensus from the commission? I mean, is that Bob described seemed to be the appropriate way to go? I mean, it does.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
I also think
Mr. Shipp.
Some industry input from Tidewater Trade Association, boat manufacturers, the American Boating Council or something, would have some input because it is more than just one brand that's being, that we have to deal with, when there might be only one, being sold in Virginia now. But
what we're really wrangling in with is, we started out as to what do we call it. We have no legal definition anywhere that I can find of what this is, what it describes, or anything else. So it's
in general, we think that Oregon is probably on the right track from the standpoint of you have to have a bona fide propulsion, not a 1.5-horsepower trolling motor. With the sail area, some means to get it underway to effectively moor it. And you probably ought to have 180-degree visibility. And most houseboats have an elevated bridge or, an ability to do that. So there are some things that we need to look at. We have not talked to the game department, but we did not want to, totally restrict it to if you can get a Virginia registration, numbers, that's it. The commission has no jurisdiction.
Well, I think I heard one of the states actually make that as a as a condition that just because you can get a number doesn't mean that it is.
Coast Guard allows states to adopt, stricter authority.
Well,
but we'll try to be as inclusive as we can. I can't at this point give you a timeline, but we'll try to move forward with it. To the best of our ability.
And just do the best you can to include anybody that you think may have a proverbial standing in here, because I want a 360-degree view.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, all the
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Fox.
Should we set a target date for the completion of this study?
Why don't we do this? Target dates are kind of, I've dealt with certain projects that have target dates, and although they do set deadlines, they also at times set false expectations. Why don't we do this if we could? Why don't we have Mr. Grab come back and give us a briefing probably in 60 days as to how where we're going and where it is? Would that be satisfactory to you, Mr. Fox?
Give him any time period is fine with me as long as there is one.
Because I would rather it go at a clip that ensures it's all the parameters are examined. And examine to the benefit of all involved than to push it down the road too fast.
An update of the January commission meeting?
That would be great. Okay. Thank you all so very much for all your presentation. Mr. Ward, good having you here, sir.
Could I ask somebody, what's DGIF?
Department of Game and Inland Fisheries. I'm sorry, sir. We use those acronyms around here like everybody knows what we're talking about. Like y'all use those legal terms.
I just want once y'all, before I leave here today, I appreciate what you're doing. I'm looking at it for my client, but I also have clients in seafood business. And I understand the necessity and the requirement that you all have to look out for the bay. We all know that MSX and Dermo wiped out at least Ballard and Miles Oyster Company many years ago, and if it had not been for the oyster, I wouldn't be standing here before you today. So I do commend you, and I understand what your obligations are, and I appreciate the manner in which you all are trying to handle that.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Warden. Again, it's good to have you here before the commission. We're at a point now. It's 11:30. Mr. Travelstead, do we have any housekeeping matters under your purview that we could – that would take 15 to 20 minutes, or is this the time we probably?
It's probably best to go ahead and write.
Okay. Okay. Is Rob here? Rob? What time did we tell public comments were to be held after noon today or after 1 o'clock as usual? Afternoon?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do this. Let's recess now, and we'll reconvene. Let's plan on reconvening at 12:30. That way, Jack, we may readjust the agenda with items that we deem to be more important than less important, just as far as housekeeping is concerned, and we'll go from there. Okay, we'll stand in adjournment until 12:30.